Welcome to episode 1 of She Gets Sit Done. Thank you so much for being here, and we would love it if you'd hit subscribe and give us a like. Thanks.
There we go.
Hello.
Hello. Episode 1 of She Gets Sit Done.
She Gets Sit Done.
A podcast for dog owners by dog trainers. But without all the fancy stuff, just advice that works, right? Straight to the point.
Right.
That's us.
Yep.
So I'm Sana. I'm a dog trainer in Auckland, and I've been training dogs for 5 years. Used to be primary school teacher, and now I train lots of dogs. My aim is to be able to give you handhelds that are super easy to follow. And I love teaching group classes.
And I'm Laura, and I live in Melbourne, and I've been a dog trainer for 13 years. And I also have kids. So my aim is to teach you guys how to deal with that, dogs and kids mainly, but also dogs. In a way that you can actually achieve without fancy words, without fancy things, just daily life that works. It's worked for me, so I hope it works for you.
That's it. Awesome. So today's topic on our very first podcast is about over-socialization.
You mean socialization? Very passionate.
Oh my God, over-socialization.
What do you mean over socialization?
Exactly. Is that possible? Yes.
Yes.
Laura and I are both really passionate about that subject. Because I would say that at least 75% of the dogs that I work with have leash reactivity due to over socialization. So the owners will come to me that their dog goes wild on lead and their dog is really good off lead, but not on lead. And yeah, I deal with that a lot. How about you?
Yeah, same for me. And I find, and this is something that people usually get really surprised by when their dogs start becoming really reactive. And so we always associate reactivity with something negative. And when I tell them, oh, I think your dog is actually being over socialized, it just doesn't compute in the brain. It's like, but he has so many friends.
Exactly.
Why is he reacting? So yeah, this is where over socialization becomes an issue, I think, that not many speak about.
Yeah, I think it's really important to also actually look at what is socialization. I know there's lots of dog trainers out there talking about it, but when I talk to dog owners, they often just think, oh, it's my dog being social with dogs. And so they put so much time and effort in doing it because let's face it, no one goes out thinking like, oh my God, I want my dog to be reactive. So I'm going to try and do the right thing and have my dog meet 100 other dogs. So they're going to be super friendly when they're older.
But do you remember, maybe you don't, I'm a lot older than you, but do you remember when we were younger or you were a kid, when I got my first dog, I was told by the authorities that be that my dog had to see and meet every people and every dog in the world so that he would be a social dog. This is actually an advice that was given and is still being given. If you Google it, you find it. I mean, and so I think there is a misconception about socialization that came directly from that advice, which became over-socialization.
Yeah, I think it's like lots of dog advice, right? That's still out there. Like, don't let your dog walk through the door first. Like, whoever came up with that, I mean, it just stuck. And now I still have people say like, oh yeah, but I don't let my dog go through the door first. Like, honestly, it doesn't matter at all. So yeah. Whoever said, I mean, I don't know if things were just really different 20 years ago or 15 years ago when it came to dogs. And we're both from Europe originally, where dogs are just way more accepted in daily life than Australia and New Zealand. I think that also plays a part in why dogs are a bit wild on lead a lot, or they struggle with going to cafes and public places because they don't get to do that as often as in the Netherlands. Like when I was in the Netherlands last time, like in July, I forgot that dogs are allowed to go into clothing stores and everything.
Oh my God, isn't that wonderful?
And it's like, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. Oh, dogs in cafes, restaurants, clothing stores, everything. And I mean, I'm sure that some people are like, ew, dog, but it's just accepted. They don't come like, here I find that people say, oh, but people have allergies. I'm like, well, people have allergies in the Netherlands too, but the dogs still get to go everywhere. So, but yeah, I don't
but
know.
Yeah, which brings us back to the over socialization, right? Like something we have noticed being European, we have noticed happens a lot here in Australia and possibly New Zealand, is that people kind of tend to go a little bit overboard with the dogs in terms of, you know, the dog becomes very quickly the center of everything. And then, yeah, we want to do well. We want to make this dog social. So let's take him everywhere. But what I've noticed is that when people over-socialize here is they take the dog everywhere with the aim that the dog is going to be like the main event of this whole thing.
Yeah,
Whereas
very true.
If you make that, if you oppose that to like regular socialization, like we see in France or in the Netherlands, people take their dogs everywhere, but the dog is just there. It's like the
it's
dog
not
just
about
follows
them.
along.
Yeah,
but it's not about them. We're not doing something for the dog. We're just going to see a friend, or we're just going to the shops, and the dog just has to follow. So that's, I think, where in here over that socialization happens, because the dog is the center of it.
Yeah, you go out because of the dog here.
Yeah.
Whereas
in
Europe, you bring the dog along on errands. And yeah, exactly. I'm very
or
much
even
agreeing
like
with you there. Yeah.
In here, if you go somewhere with your dog and you meet with someone that has a dog, immediately we want the dogs to interact with each other. And so again, it turns into the dog show, right? And I remember, like in my family in France, everybody has dogs. And when people get together with their own dogs, no one is there looking at what the dogs are doing to each other. We just get together and the dogs happen to be there, but we're not focusing on how the dogs are getting along or not. And most of the time, this is where dogs are used to this. Yeah, we go somewhere, there's another dog. Oh, there's another dog. I don't care. I'm with my owner. And that's usually how it ends. Whereas here, that's where, it happens so much, the over-socialization, because it's that expectation of, like, the dogs need to play.
And here, dogs don't know how to just be around other dogs. I think a really big part of that is as well, definitely after COVID, and I definitely see it here in New Zealand more than I'd see it in Australia, is the insane amount of doggy daycares and pack walkers that are out here. Like, you know how many owners will bring their puppy straight away to doggy daycare because they need to socialize. So you throw this puppy in with 10, 15 other dogs to run around like crazy all day, practicing extremely excited, crazy social behavior all day. And then you expect them to be nice and quiet when they meet dogs out and about on your normal walk. But they've just been practicing for 8 hours that they can do whatever they want and run around and bark and do all these things. So I feel like it's definitely way more prominent here. Yeah.
And I think, in Australia, it has grown too. Like my first job in here in Australia was to be a doggy daycare attendant. That was my first official job when I came 13 years ago. And so I can say that there are doggy daycares that are actually really good. And like the one
Sure.
where I worked in, they actually hired me because I was a dog trainer. And the person that opened that doggy daycare said to me, I love dogs, but I have no idea. I need someone to work with me that will understand dog behavior. So that was really good. And this doggy daycare was really good. I guess it still is. I don't work there anymore. But the things we did, I put in place a lot of protocols for the dogs not to go crazy, not to play all the time, to have downtime. I did all that, but I remember that everybody was calling me the party pooper and boo-hoo, the dogs are not playing, you know? And like, so as the doggy daycare grew and we had more and more dogs, it was more and more impossible to calm everyone down, all the dogs. Like, you can do that with 5 dogs, but you can't do it with 60 dogs. So I found it really difficult. And this is when I made the decision to leave the doggy daycare environment, because I noticed that it was not ideal for dogs, you know? And I'm a dog trainer. I want what's best for dogs. And so it didn't work for me anymore to work in a place that I knew was making dogs worse. So that's when I left. So there are doggy daycares that are really good, but those are rare. And what people want, because the people that want their dog in a doggy daycare, they want the party, they want the dogs to play all day. That's what they feel, that that's good socialization. So that's also the problem. The good doggy daycares, they're not fun.
No, exactly.
You know,
They're for like enrichment and teaching calmness, but people love to see the photos and the videos. Look how much fun my dog is having. And they are, but also you're practicing non-stop behaviors that you don't really you don't really want to.
And I remember when I posted photos or videos of the doggy daycare where I'm like, look at this, there's 20 dogs sleeping, how wonderful. And I'm making this video
and people
and
are
then you
like
post
boring.
It you post it on social media thinking, oh my god, this is the best thing I could give these dogs. And then the comments from the owners or people that
like
look
they
at the
could do this
video
at
is
home.
like, oh, this is so sad, why are they all so sad, is this place so boring that my dog does nothing, you know? You get all these sorts of comments, so obviously this is where there's a problem, right? The misconception of what is good for a dog from a trainer's point of view and what is good for a dog from an owner's point of view. So that's I struggle with that.
I totally agree, and I do think that COVID has made things heaps worse. Like the amount of people I get now that will say like, oh, I've got a puppy and I'm going back to work and I need to put my puppy in daycare because I'm not home. I'm like, what? So what? Leave your puppy home. The dog doesn't need constant entertainment and enrichment. Just teach your dog how to relax and they're fine. When I got Lennox, I was still a primary school teacher and my partner works full time as well. So from 8 to 5, he was by himself. I think at the beginning, I went home during lunchtime because I worked close to home and I would quickly see him for like half an hour. And he was a 9-week-old puppy alone in the backyard. And we had somewhere where he could hide, you know, in case it rained and sunshine and all that. And he was fine. And he still is fine. No issues with separation anxiety, no issues in general, because we just let him be a dog instead of give him endless social interactions and then they come home and they're overtired, which is a whole new problem that we're not discussing today. But that's over socialization for you.
So but the I think the concept that people think their dog needs to be entertained all the time, needs to be interacting all the time, needs to be meeting everybody, I think that's where it all goes wrong, right?
Yeah.
So,
and I think
and then,
that's the problem with socialization. I feel like that's still how they explain it. Like, oh, if my dog needs to be friendly and okay with things, he needs to interact with it. When really, what we want is for them to be neutral. Be like, oh, cool, I don't care. But I can be friendly, but I can also just not care. Like, that's also socialization.
Yeah, I think that's the part I find where people kind of find it hard to understand. Like, if you are, as a dog trainer, you go and see a family or people with a dog, and you tell them that actually to have a well-socialized dog, you need to teach your dog to not interact so much with their environment. That's when, you know, for like, it's hard to understand that it doesn't have to be black or white. Like, you can also try to, like, your dog doesn't need to interact with everything, but yes, at some point it needs to interact with someone. You know, you can't just like shut your dog out of the world. So this is where, you know, I like to, and I think you do it too, I like to tell people that you can let your dog interact with relevant things, relevant people, relevant dogs, and that all like gives you a little sorting. So if people are like, oh, but I don't know when I should say yes to interaction and when I should say no, well, just think about, is this relevant to my life? Am I gonna meet this person every day? Like, if it's, you go to a cafe and every day you go to that cafe, there's this person with, who also has a dog there, is that relevant? It becomes relevant. So you kind of want your dogs to meet each other because they're going to see each other all the time.
Exactly.
So that's kind of how I try to
teach
people.
But the person that just walks by you as you come out of the supermarket that wants to say, can I just say hi to your dog? No, I'll never see you again. Carry on.
That's right.
Exactly.
Carry on. Yes, it's hard. And like,
go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, and that brings me to my, like, the analogy that I love to use about meeting people and dogs. Like, it's your dog does not need to say hi to everyone. And that means dogs or people, because all it's teaching your dog is that you have no value to your dog outside of the house. You know, and waving treats in front of their face and begging for their attention isn't going to do anything. If you teach your dog from a young age that every single person they see on the street might come and give them a pet and might give them attention, that's just your treat and your attention outside is worth $5 to your dog, and every other dog that they, a person that they see is $100. Now, if you offer me $5 or $100, I'll go for $100, thanks.
And creating that expectation of, you know, when we leave the house and there's people or dogs out there, that's going to be the, like, you know, the fireworks in my walk. Like, this is what I'm expecting. When I go out, I expect that at some point I'm going to meet someone or some dog, you know? So I think that's what needs to change. If we want to stop over-socializing, we need to stop thinking that when we take our dogs out, we're going to meet someone that was like someone that has a dog that can play with our dog. Because I think a lot of people, I don't know, we should do a survey one day, but a lot of people, that's what they hope for. They take their dog out, hopefully to a park. And the one thing they're waiting for is that, please let it be another dog so my dog can socialize, you know?
That's true. We should do the survey in the Facebook group and see what people say. That's a really good
one. What are your expectations?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Lots of people will go to the beach so their dog can play with other dogs, not to just enjoy the beach together or the park or whatever place you're going with your dog. So that brings us then to the question, when can my dog socialize?
So when does that happen?
So I always do say that I'm a giant party pooper, and I rather, if your dog is already reactive, let's start there. If you already have a reactive dog on lead that lunges and barks and is kind of out of control when he sees another dog, but is social off lead, right? That means you have an over-socialized, reactive, leash-reactive dog. For me, for those dogs, you get zero interaction on lead with dogs or people. And that I know that that is really hard. But if you let your dog meet dogs and people on an interval, it gets worse.
Yeah, it's the gambling
right.
brain.
Exactly. I was about to say that too. That's what how gambling works. If you
Maybe
win the lotto,
this
time. Oh my God. It's like
Maybe.
If you win the lotto every week, eventually you get bored with it. But if you never win the lotto, you also stop playing. But if you win every now and then, that's what makes you keep going. Because maybe this time I'm going to get my big reward. Right? So if we do the same thing with dogs, that's what they learn. They learn, oh, okay, maybe not this one, but I'm going to get really excited about the next person. So cold turkey for those type of dogs, I would say straight away. And that doesn't mean for the rest of their life, but that does mean for a good amount, like a few months, I would say, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you can, once you sort that out, you can also ease into letting your dog greet relevant dogs and relevant
people.
Exactly. Not just everyone, yes. And then you have a good pattern and you can live forever, because that's the thing with dog training. Like, it's the same when, you know, if you're trying to lose weight and you do a fast diet and you're going to be drinking shakes for like a week and you're going to lose 20 kilos. Yeah, that's great, but that's not sustainable. What's going to happen when you stop doing that? So this is like not letting your dog meet dogs on leash, like as a constant, and then teaching your dog that the relevant dogs are you're able to meet those, then that gives you something you can live like that forever. You know, you can have a life, it's sustainable. It's not
exactly
possible to achieve. And then your reactivity goes down. And we both have dogs that are reactive or were reactive.
That's it.
And that's what I do, you know?
And the funny thing is, with my reactive dogs, and Lennox, my Steffi, is reactive. And at the beginning, he did get to meet people or dogs every now and then. And I had a much harder time with him. And then I think I just cut it down to, no, he never gets to meet anyone. And now when we see dogs on a walk, he's totally fine. Like, he looks at them and he's like, whatever. He's a bit trickier sometimes if the dog starts full on barking at him.
Yeah.
But Zelda, my social dog, struggles way more seeing other dogs on lead, because she is the dog that I often bring with me to socialize with other dogs, to help, you know, rehab and all that kind of stuff. So she still can be really like, oh my God, there's a dog or a person, because she loves people. Mm-hmm. Whereas Lennox, I just had that full rule of we're not meeting anyone. And I could probably easily take him anywhere now, much easier than Zelda when it comes to that.
Mm-mm. And that doesn't mean your dogs, just because they don't meet dogs that on leash, doesn't mean they're not able to be around other dogs, right?
Yeah,
because for my dogs it's the same. Like, and I'm called the party pooper as well, because if you see me walking my own dogs out there and you come with your dogs, I'm not gonna let my dogs meet your dogs. That's like 100%. And it's not that I don't
that's
like
it.
You or I don't like your dogs. It's just like that's my rule for my dogs, and my dogs are very powerful, so if things go wrong, they will do
they
damage.
Go wrong. Yeah, that's it.
But also, you know, I have doggy daycare in my house. Sometimes I have dogs that come and stay at my house. My dogs can be around other dogs, the relevant ones, and they will be fine. Like, they're fine with like 20, 30, I don't know how many dogs they're okay with that are part of our lives. But yeah, they will not. I will never let them meet dogs that I see in the street. Because that's my rule that I created for them. There's no point. Why do we need to? Like, they see enough dogs anyway, but that's me. Like, I understand the concern of owners that, imagine first owners that have only one dog. Their main concern is like, my dog doesn't have any friends. But then if you start digging a little bit, everybody has someone else around them that has a dog, or maybe someone in the family has a dog, or maybe there is this person in the park that has a dog that gets along well with your dog. Then there it is. There's your friend.
That's your friend. You exactly. You don't need 100 friends.
You don't need
You're better
100.
Off with two really
yeah.
good ones than 100 vague ones, you know,
For
that
sure.
are just like. So I love how you do your intros with your dogs and how you allow socialization in your pack. I think that's worth talking about because, you know, we've said now, do not let your dog interact with irrelevant people or other dogs. So how do you introduce relevant dogs?
Aha. Well, for me, I always do it really slow, and especially with dogs that I know will be tricky because when I introduce dogs into a pack, usually the dog I introduce has issues socializing with other dogs. So it's very rarely a dog that's happy being around other dogs. So what I do is, and this is like something that other people might not understand right away, but it's like I tell the dogs, you're not allowed to sniff each other. You're not allowed to interact at all for now. So we start like that. Every single new dog that gets introduced into one of my groups of dogs or one of my dogs, it's gonna be like that. We're gonna walk together for a bit. And if it's just me and two dogs, I'll have one dog on each side of me. And because I have a very good handling skills, I am able to hold two dogs on each side of me without the dogs, you know, actually sniffing
Interact.
Each other.
So, you
yes.
know, if that was a dog owner wanting to meet a friend, they would both be holding their own dog. So
yes.
at least
yes.
that's good.
That distance, and what I like to do is you really start from the outside. So each dog will be on the outside, and then each owner will be on the inside. So you have two owners, dog, dog. And then
yep.
that's how we start. And I tell people, don't try to make your dogs sniff each other. Just forget about your dogs. Let's do it the French way, okay? Let's just go for a walk and pretend we actually want to go for a walk because we want to talk about our lives, not because we want our dogs to meet. And if you act like that, if you act like this walk, the main thing about this walk is not that the dogs will meet, then it will go smooth because eventually the dogs can see that there is no expectation of them doing anything together. And then they start relaxing and then they start being themselves, like, oh, okay, I'm gonna sniff this tree and I'm just not gonna care about the other dog. And once you get that, this is my signal. Once you get the dogs not caring about each other at all, like not trying to lunge or sniff or whine or anything, when they're like, oh, okay, I'm not meeting this dog, I give up, I start sniffing, then I give a little bit more leash. So now there is a physical possibility of meeting because the leash is long, and if they wanted to, they could, but they don't do it anymore because it's been established that that was not the main event. And now we have two dogs that walk parallel, and when they get along, usually they start sniffing the same stuff. And then you can see that the dogs kind of follow each other. This is when you know that, yeah, okay, the introduction went well. They like each other, but because we put a barrier at the start that you're not here to do stuff that means you're going to run around or play or anything, the dogs have the rules in place. The rules are we sniff stuff, and it starts like that. And yeah, that's how I socialize. But yeah, it's very party pooping feeling because what most people want is that their dogs will meet
and
do the
play and chase
dog,
balls
and then...
and yeah.
Yes. That can happen. In my books, it can happen. It's just not on the first day. Like, you know, never on the first day.
That's it.
So yeah.
That's you gotta wine and dine them first. That's right. That's a good way
to
put it.
Right? You build a little relationship before you go into the full on, hey.
Exactly. There's no sex on the first day, you know.
That's right. Each to their own, but you know, if you want
That's
something
it.
Long term, you don't want to go too fast.
That's it. I love that. And now there will be people saying, well, I did that and I'm still married after 15 years. I know it's possible.
Yeah,
but you know,
some people are lucky.
Take it slow.
Take it slow. Take it slow.
Awesome. So that's a really good way to start socializing dogs in a more easy way. And obviously, if you do it that way, that instantly cancels out all those random meetings. Right, because
definitely.
You can't go and take a slow stroll with every dog that you meet.
That's
it's
right.
just not relevant.
Yes.
Again, relevance is going to be a massive
yes.
one.
Well,
and
it's
another
a good way to
you
it's
go.
a good way to explain to your dog, because how do you explain things to dogs? You have to show them, right? So I think going for a walk with a dog that is going to be relevant in their life, because you want them to meet nicely, is going to teach your dog that whenever we walk for a bit of time with another person that has a dog and I'm not really allowed to like get full on them, this is going to be a relationship for me. So next time I see that person with that dog, oh yeah, I know them. This is what we do. And now you've established a pattern of how we socialize.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, if you're like walking in the street and there's another person comes with a dog and we get them to sniff, and then it goes either one way or the other. They either want to play and it does, they can't because they're on leash, or they
and then
want
they
to
get
fight.
Frustrated.
And then, yeah, that's right. So if we do that, yeah, that's what we're teaching our dogs. This is the pattern we're telling them. This is like, okay, when we see another dog in the street, it can, you know, it's only going to go wrong. Because if you like that dog, you can't play with him and it's frustrating. And if you don't like that dog, it just, you know, shit's going to hit the fan anyway. So now that's how we're building. That's how we're building all that anxiety. Yes. Like, oh, there's a dog coming. This is going to go wrong anyway, but I want to meet them, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
So I think, yeah, if we kill that one and instead we teach the dog that,
hey, there's a dog and it means nothing to me, but maybe, maybe my friend's dog or the neighbor's dog, I get to meet that dog instead.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I get to do things that are not stressful for me. Like walking parallel side by side for dogs is actually really enjoyable. Like, you know how dogs are group animals, but the one thing they enjoy the most is walking together as a group. Like, and I know this because I've done this for years, and when I notice my dogs thrive the most is then when we do that, when we're like a team that moves together. So if you give that to your dog, then you're giving them the best.
That's it.
I love that.
And plus, you also, with that, you take all those scary things away for some dogs, you know, like for example, if you have a small dog that is nervous of big dogs, which I get quite a bit, like they can easily interact and learn how to interact with big dogs because they feel safe on a nice walk. There isn't like
That's
the
right.
expectation of, oh, we got the play bell and now the Staffy is going to run right into me on full speed, not maliciously, but that's how Staffies play, you know. And now the little dog is reactive to large, like, oh, you can just create so many issues by allowing high intensity play and having that as the standard. So how would you recommend people to do that? Because I know the first question we'll get is, but my dog pulls on lead and he keeps lunging towards the other dog, and what do I do with that? Do I just ignore it? Do I just keep walking? You know, that issue.
Yeah, most of the time for like cases of over socialized dogs that start doing that because they have that expectation of like, oh, there's a dog over there, I gotta meet him. I just tell people, we're gonna shut that down. So at first, I want to tell people that they have to be faster about changing directions before their dog goes crazy. So this is how I do it. So if we're walking down the street and there is a dog coming, most of the time, if you're aware, you're going to see the dog before your dog sees it. Because I'm not sure, but I think we have a better vision.
I think so
that,
too,
that
yeah.
Dog. So the visuals, if you see a dog, you know you have half a second before your dog sees it. So you can already do that by like, oh, I saw a dog, like change directions. And while you change directions, your dog can see the other dog, but we're already going somewhere else. So now you're killing the expectation of meeting the other dog, because it's like, oh, we're not going over there. Bummer, you know? So you might get a little bit of a, oh, we don't want to go there. But
and
we already...
And ignore that. That's like my main
exactly.
thing.
Ignore
that,
ignore
because
that. That's
so
right.
many people will then make their dog sit and
yes.
wait till the other dog walks by. And I swear that's like the almost the worst thing you can do for a dog that really wants to meet the other dog.
Yeah.
It's like having your kid only sit and watch at Disneyland and you can't touch anything. It's not nice.
Yeah,
It's
parents is part of
impossible, right?
this is part of the old school, I would call that old school advice, because when same again, when I was a kid and I had my first dog and I went to dog classes, that's what I was told. Like to make my dog sit whenever there was some kind of trigger, you know? And
Yeah.
yes, it will work if you're like strong enough, strong-willed enough, and if you can like make your dog do it and you're gonna
But
shut your dog down. Yes, you can
so
do that, but like, that's
counterproductive.
horrible. It's super horrible, and what you're doing to your dog is horrible. It's like you're making them sit something that they either really want to interact with, or they're really scared of, or they really hate. So
That's
either of
it.
those three things, you're making them sit and watch. Like, how torture is that?
Yeah.
So I'm all for letting the dog see the trigger, because if you never let your dog see what triggers them, you cannot progress. But for me, the best thing to do is to change directions. Like this whole, I sit here with my dog and here's the trigger. Well, you're looking at it. We're all looking at it. It's horrible. Like, how do we get out of this? You know, there's
That's it for a second. I'll just have to like blend that back in together. So yeah, sitting your dog whilst looking at triggers is just not going to be productive. Like, either walk away, create more distance. You can correct excessive reactions as well, but I feel like that's it's a chat for another time. Can you? Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
The thing to remember to sort of start decreasing that expectation of meeting the other dogs, change direction. Just like, you don't really have to go there where you thought you were going. You can go somewhere else, you know, like, especially if you are actually walking your dog and not necessarily, you know, going from A to B. Like, if you don't really have somewhere to be or to go with your dog, nothing stops you from changing your way, you know. You can just go somewhere else, make your life easy. Life
Yeah, and
doesn't have
even
to
if
be
you just go into someone's driveway, or you go into take a quick left and then you just return again after the dog has passed and you carry on where you were going. It takes like 2 minutes of your time on a walk and it might make your whole progress go forward.
Exactly. And then this is a long run thing, because if you do it consistently enough, like, that means you do it all the time, not sometimes. If you do that all the time, then yeah, within weeks your dog will expect that. It will expect that, oh, if there's another dog, we're gonna change directions. And now you have a dog that's like actually looking up at you to see where we're going, you know, and now you have
Exactly.
thing. So that's about that. But yeah, there's so much to talk about.
There is. What was I gonna say? I was gonna say something about, oh, never mind. Can't remember it. Signs of an over socialized dog.
Yeah, let's summarize it so it makes it a bit easier. So how do you recognize an over socialized dog? One, it gets excited quickly.
Yes, gets excited about people and dogs excessively as well. Quickly and excessively, lunging and barking on lead, but being okay off lead. Not being able. Go ahead.
Demanding behavior.
Yeah, what type of demanding behavior?
Barking, like barking at you or at the person. Like, I've seen this a lot. People, like dogs, barking at the new person because they want a pat or they want something from
That's it.
them.
Yeah, definitely. The barn barking. I lost mine. So he said barking, lunging. What's that?
No recall.
No recall. Oh yeah, that's a big one. And no impulse control, but also not being able to relax around other dogs. That you can only have a dog and your dog needs to play, play, play. Like they can't just lie down. And that also often means that they don't have social cues. When a dog tells them to stop, you know?
That's a good one. Yes.
Yeah.
Lack of social cues.
Mm.
That's
especially with young dogs, I would say. You know how young dogs keep pestering older dogs often, and then the older dog needs to start telling them off because they're too much? I would say, and for some dogs, obviously, that goes into adolescence and then adulthood, and that's when you have those super friendly dogs that are actually really, really frustrating for other dogs to be around because they just don't know how to quit. I think that's a big one too. And again, that's like a whole different story. What we didn't talk about was socializing puppies, because that's really where it all starts, right? Like, of course, we say no meetings with puppies and all that kind of stuff, and we've already got a reactive dog. And the hard thing with puppies is they look so cute. So everyone will want to walk up to you and be like, oh my God, can I pet your dog? Yeah, so that's really, I feel like there you have to just learn to be assertive and say, sorry, no, we're in training. And you can say that as friendly as you can. And I know I have clients that tell me, oh, but they still pet the dog anyway. But this is where you need to step up for your dog and say, no, we're not meeting. He's not calm. This is... You're not relevant. Maybe don't say that. But
you get your own dog. That's what I tell people.
Yeah, but I know that is an issue for a lot of people to be able to speak up when they have a puppy because, you know, like look at all the little Labradors. They look cute as when they're puppies. But then the moment they're big, people are way less interested to pet your dog. But now your lab or your whatever dog has learned, oh yeah, cool, I get pets every time. So I think for puppies, it is really important that you set that boundary straight away and then find some fully vaccinated dogs from 8 weeks old or whatever, straight away, let them play. You don't have to wait till they're fully vaccinated if the dog that you interacted with is fully vaccinated. And I always prefer to recommend play with adult dogs, not with other puppies.
This is what I'm doing with one of my current clients. Like, we are actually meeting with one of my dogs that is a nice grown-up adult dog. And we are meeting with her boisterous puppy because up until now, her puppy has only met other puppies. And this is making her life crazy because no one's teaching this puppy how to behave as an, you know, as a polite dog would be. So we're doing that and it works really well. So
yeah,
people that have a puppy would do that more rather than trying to find other puppies for the dog to play with. The dog would learn more.
Yes,
for sure.
I like to do that with Zelda as well. Like, especially when people say, oh, my puppy never stops. I like to bring Zelda out because Zelda's really good at correcting that type of behavior in a way that dogs understand. But yeah, puppies can't teach other puppies because no one knows the rules.
They don't know the rules. Yeah, that's fine. That's true.
All right, let's summarize our top tips then for people to put in practice. And hopefully can take away in an easy, to the point thing to train. Like, we don't want to bore you with 30-minute a day training plans that no one will achieve anyway, especially if they have to do that for 6 months straight. We want to give you action points that you can put into practice right away.
So it's all about changing the things you do and just applying the new things. You start doing that in your daily life, then you have a better result.
That's it. So number one is only meet people and dogs that are relevant to your life. If they are just random people, there is no meetings with them ever. at all.
That means never.
Exactly.
Maybe this time, no, we don't meet people and dogs we don't know. That's it. That's the rule.
That's
End of
it.
story.
Correct. When you do meet someone that is relevant for your life, you need to really reinforce calm behavior. So if you can go for a walk with the other dog first, that would be awesome. But I know that's not always doable. If it's a person, you need to reinforce calm behavior. So I want you to say to the person, ignore your dog for 10 minutes until your dog is like, oh, whatever, I don't get to meet that person. A lot of people will say, tell your dog to sit. But you know how many dogs will sit like this?
Yeah, it's too hard.
That sit is not a calm sit. Like, their mind is still like, oh my God, let me meet. Yeah. So we want them to kind of get bored with the person. So just let them ignore them. And then once they...
You don't give your dog any orders. It's just you don't want them to be jumping and being crazy. That's it. That's all you need.
That's it. Practice hanging out at places that are slightly busy and make it a non-event. Yeah, bring a mat, bring some treats, go sit down somewhere where it's busy, but go further away. So if this is the cafe, look, oh, it's blurring out. If this is the cafe, don't sit here. Go sit over here first and work your way towards the cafe. Yeah, the same with the dog park. Your dog can be calm at the dog park, but not if this is the dog park and that's your dog. Move away. Move away.
Yeah, I think that's good.
And then...
Forgot.
And I had for number four, go for a walk first. And you reward them at the end with interactions. If they deserve it. Yeah, so if they're social dogs, they can probably have that play.
Yeah.
It's like... That's called the pre-mac principle, right? You give first, you have to do something you might not like, and then you get a reward. So you need to eat your dinner first, then you get dessert. And that's the same with dogs.
And when they do get to interact, keep the levels low. This is also something. You are allowed to interrupt the playing or the interaction for a bit and then let them go again. It's allowed. Mm. You don't have to either let them play until everything ends. And that's it. You can do increments. You can do like 1 minute of crazy play and then everybody recalls their own dog and then we do nothing for 2 minutes and then we let the dogs go off again. That's like
that's
actually same as pre-mac, right? It's like the more you're calm and the more you come back to me, the more you get to interact again with this dog. So
yeah,
that works
absolutely.
Really
cool. I feel like we covered a lot of stuff.
I think so too. So yeah, I hope it clarifies the over socialization a little bit. Hopefully. And well, you know, people can always go in our pages and check the write-ups that we do because those are also full of that.
That's it. So Laura's page is The French Touch and I'm The Complete Canine. You can find us on Facebook and on Instagram and I'm on YouTube as well. Yeah, we hope that these tips were helpful for you and you can make start with fixing your dog's hyper focus on other dogs and people and make your life just more fun when you walk your dog.